Guess who's back, 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 back again. Alright, and welcome to the Rory's Nitro podcast, the show that rips up the buy rates and TV ratings and declares our own winners in some of pro wrestling's biggest head-to-head battles. I'm your host, Lee Carlos Cunningham, back after a prolonged absence to talk some 1996 wrestling with everybody. Today we're going to look at the November 18th episodes of Raw and Nitro. Survivor Series 96 actually took place the night before this, so look out for the Survivor Series 96 vs. World War III review coming soon. And we open up with our commentary team, the three-man booth of Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and JR. And we're told that in our opening contest, the Tough Man contest, as it was billed, which was supposed to be Stone Cold Steve Austin taking on Vader. Vader's been hurt at the Survivor Series and will be replaced by Mankind, who comes out with Paul Bearer. Mankind jumps Austin early and they brawl on the floor to some strong Austin chants as we continue to see Stone Cold getting over with the crowd. A bit of a pull apart from officials, and we're finally in the ring and ready to start. We ring the bell and they immediately go back out the ring and start brawling, which tickles me a little bit. We do eventually come back in and Mankind hits some corner strikes on Austin. Vince McMahon tells us that Shawn Michaels took Jose Lothario back to Texas after his injuries at the Survivor Series. We go to some more outside brawling and the crowd are really hot for this. They are loving this match to start with. Austin hits a low blow to escape the mandible claw and we go out to a commercial break. We see an apron leg drop from Mankind, a suplex and a clothesline before Austin goes on the attack and Paul Bearer goes to the back to get the executioner. He comes in and interferes and we get a disqualification. The Undertaker follows him out and cleans house. Stone Cold then clotheslines the Undertaker out of the ring and he comes back in and Austin bails to end the segment in what was a really enjoyable opening contest with some hot action and a bit of a lame finish, but for a TV opener I can live with that. They show us a commercial for the replay of the Survivor Series, and they're very careful not to mention that Stone Cold lost to Bret Hart, talking about what a great match it was. We see Ahmed Johnson in the crowd. This is a little bit odd, as he's been suspended, so we can only assume that that suspension has ended. We then see Sonny come out and introduces Farouk, along with PG-13, and this is something well and truly worth playing for you here, because this is the first time we'll have heard any of this.
I know that's right.
Right now, I'd like to introduce to you a man that I am so proud to call a dear friend of mine.
I'll bet.
The leader of the Nation of Domination, Farouk.
We are the Nation of Domination.
The Nation of Domination.
Where's Ahmed Johnson here? Ahmed Johnson's not that far away.
Your mother.
Don't listen to what I'm saying.
It's for real, not planned.
Farouk is the man.
So hit your knees and start praying.
I got the power like the bear.
Quick, flatten the cat.
Put two together.
Feel your face on the mat.
You count the stars while the ref counts three. Hope you like to look at ceilings, cause that's all you're gonna see.
From the Nation of Domination, ladies and gentlemen, yes, Farouk, and he has a 2x4 in his hand, in the event you did not notice that, and I think the reason he does is because he saw Ahmed Johnson a moment ago. He knows Ahmed Johnson is seated in this capacity crowd.
So yeah, as I mentioned just before playing the clip, we haven't heard the Nation theme on this show yet. Now, of course, this is always the tricky part of the timeline when we have to decide whether to put the TV or the pay-per-view shows up first, and we've gone with TV this round. So the Nation had actually debuted the night before this at Survivor Series. I believe they actually debuted on Superstars or something, but the first time that we would have seen them on the timeline is actually going to be the next episode. So I thought I'd play this as the first for TV viewers, certainly, of Raw, the first time they've seen the Nation come out, Farouk and PG-13. We then cut to the Acclaim Slam of the Week, and it was, Acclaim, of course, the maker of the In Your House video game for PlayStation, and it was Rocky's debut the night before at Survivor Series, Rocky Maivia. We then go back to the ring, and Sonny's joined the commentary team, and Farouk will be taking on Savio Vega. Clarence Mason is also out with Farouk. Savio hits an arm drag, a drop kick, a 10 punch, and a monkey flip. We keep cutting to Ahmed Johnson in the crowd as Farouk hits a spine buster and a suplex and go to a commercial. Savio with a small package for a two, a face buster, and a slam. Farouk goes to the top turnbuckle but gets crotched. Savio goes up and hits him with a superplex, attempts to hit him with a suplex, rather, but they both fall to the floor. I'm not sure if that was a botch or intended. It looked like a botch to me. It also looked pretty sore as well. I wouldn't have wanted to take that spot if it was intended. Back in the ring, Savio hits a spin kick, and then Farouk distracts the referee, and PG-13 uses a 2x4 on Savio, allowing Farouk to pick up the 1-2-3. Ahmed Johnson comes out of the crowd and chases the Nation of Domination out with a 2x4 and cuts a promo on the Nation.
Of the Nation of Domination scattering all over this arena.
Farouk went through the crowd somewhere.
Oh my God.
Ahmed Johnson has scattered the Nation of Domination.
Hide, Sonny.
Hide behind you.
Good.
I had nothing to do with that. I did not provoke that whatsoever. I am innocent.
And Farouk. Farouk. Having words with Ahmed.
This ain't over with.
If only Ahmed could hear him. And wait a minute. Ahmed just might have words for Farouk.
Farouk, you know what, boy? I laid in bed for 5 months because you jumped me from behind, punk. You don't ever put your hands on me. So what you're going to do, what's going to happen is you're going to pay. It's payback time.
Uh-oh. Here comes Farouk.
You're going down.
Mention in its capacity, crowd.
Unbelievable.
So there you heard, that's actually one of Ahmed's better promos. It was short, sweet, understandable, and the crowd were hot for it. Well done, Ahmed. That was actually a really cool moment there. We then go to some more Milton Bradley Karate Fighters nonsense. This is definitely dragged on over the last few episodes. It's the British Bulldog versus Sonny. Sonny wins. JR's then with Sid, and we're told we'll see an interview soon, and we see still shots of the Survivor Series. Vince McMahon on commentary trying to buy some simpy for Shawn Michaels. I don't think it's going to win at work. Sorry, Sid is mega over as a babyface right now, even though he's just turned heel. We then go to our next match, which is Leaf Cassidy and Bob Holly. Sorry, I wrote down Al Snow and had to just pause for a second there to figure out what I was thinking. Versus Doug Furness and Phil LaFon, who had also debuted at the Survivor Series the night before. We get a nice sidekick from Leaf to start, and it's pretty clear early on Vince doesn't know which one's Furness and which one's LaFon. We get a Phil LaFon armbar. We go picture in picture as we see Owen Hart and the Bulldog cutting a promo on the new faces. Doug Furness hits an arm drag and an overhead belly to belly. LaFon with a spin kick and a super kick for a two as we go out to a commercial. We see a Bob Holly drop kick for a two. He does have a lovely drop kick. We see a Doug Furness drop kick for a two, a Hurricane Rana, and then Leaf with a dragon suplex. Phil LaFon, however, hits a head and arms suplex for the 1-2-3. This was a cool little match with some great moves. Enjoyable. One thing of note that I should have mentioned at the start of the match is Lou Albano came out to join the commentary team. However, we didn't hear anything from him because he joined the Spanish commentary team, which is about the most random thing I could tell you about Raw. We then go to our ending segment, which is JR in the ring with Sid. Sid tells us that Sean can have a rematch. JR says there's a lot of challenges, but Bret Hart is first. Sid here still cutting a bit of a fiery babyface promo, so I'm not sure if they were hedging their bets on whether he was going to be a heel or a face, and we end with some pyro. Not the best Sid promo, because I get the impression they didn't really know what direction to go in there, but overall, it's good to have Sid as a champ. I think it was definitely needed to change the title, and it will mean some interesting new matchups to come. That'll do it for Raw. Let's head out to the halftime segment before coming back to you with Nitro.
The referee looks at his watch, and that's halftime. What kind of reception awaits Lasso in his locker room?
For halftime, it's been a little while since I chatted to everyone, so I thought I'd just chat about some things going on recently. Notably, back in February, I went to the Elimination Chamber in Perth, and I never really got a chance to review that for everybody, so I won't go into a deep dive here, but I will just say, overall, it was a really enjoyable experience. A lot of good from the show, and a couple of things that I hope would improve if they're going to continue to run pay-per-views in Australia. And, you know, it was not a cheap exercise to get to the other side of a country this big and pay a premium for tickets. We sat at ringside, but about 20 rows back. That's probably the first little nitpick, is like we were quite close to the ring considering the size of the arena, but because all the chairs were flat, like it wasn't a great view. So I probably would have preferred to be slightly elevated, but the elevation didn't begin for a fair way back. Does make it a little tricky to see the ring, especially when there's these four pillars with a roof because it's an outdoor show, and just a lot of obstruction. And then the chamber comes down, of course, as well, and that doesn't help matters either if you're struggling to see. The show itself was really good, but I think when they're running these pay-per-views in foreign markets, you can definitely tell they're keeping the card a little bit. They're not pulling out all the stops with the star power in the matches, because these areas of the world are hungry for a show and they can get away with doing a little less. I think the fact that the chamber matches were on this made it fortunate for us, seeing the cards when they're running in other foreign countries to America. I don't think they're quite so lucky. I'm fine with them bringing out the B-tier pay-per-views rather than like Rumble, WrestleMania, because they know they can still draw big crowds at home for those. But I would, you know, I'd hate to go to one where there wasn't the gimmick matches then. So I guess if they're going to go overseas, I'd love for it to be Money in the Bank, Elimination Chamber, things like that. Or have, you know, a really, really big anticipated match, which I don't think we got on this show. I think we got a lot of storyline advancement and filler because we're a foreign country, to be perfectly honest. The chamber matches were highly enjoyable, and I really loved seeing the Elimination Chamber in person. Those two matches were the highlight of the show. The opening dark match, which was the Kabuki Warriors taking on Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, was definitely a bit of filler, and it was okay, but not great. Starting with the Women's Chamber was really good, and seeing Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan and people like that in person was great. I will say, like, this is a knock on Australia more than WWE, but Tiffany Stratton I'd never seen before, and the crowd just annoyed the shit out of me with her. It was just constantly, Tiffy time, Tiffy time. And then as soon as the chant ended, some just absolute comedian would pipe up with, don't you mean Stiffy time? Which, if you're not familiar with Australian slang, it's Stiffy is basically what a 12-year-old would call an erection. And it's like, yeah, that's funny once. The 15th, 16th time, it just really lost all its humour on me. But Australians are known for driving a joke into the ground, especially at sporting events, the favourite of which, if you ever go to a sporting event over here, is whatever sport you're watching, the first infraction of the match, the first foul, someone standing up and going, he's been doing it all night, ref, and then every foul thereafter has someone saying it, and it's just like, oh, it's just so cringe. Anyway, that's just me ranting about Australia. It's not really telling you much about the show. Judgment Day, Balor and Priest taking on the New Catch Republic was good because it was a good match, but again, it didn't really have any genuine stakes. No one thought the Judgment Day were going to lose the titles there. McIntyre winning the chamber was really good, and that was probably the match that had the most intrigue as to who was going to win it. I could definitely see them going with LA Knight, how hot he was. I could see them going with Logan Paul. I could see them going with Randy Orton. I never really thought Lashley or KO had a chance, but four genuine contenders in the match. And then we finished off with Rhea Ripley beating Nia Jax. Nice moment for Ripley. She's a huge star, and I don't begrudge her getting a main event in Australia. Absolutely worthy of it. And Nia Jax has, you know, improved. I'll say that. She's still not someone that I enjoy watching, but she's definitely improved. So overall, fantastic experience. I'd never been to Perth before and really enjoyed the city itself. I went for a few days, got to go around town, went with my brother, got to hang out and, you know, just enjoy Perth for what it was worth. And then the show was really good. So yeah, overall, first pay-per-view for me since 2014 Survivor Series, so nearly a decade since I'd been to a pay-per-view. A WWE pay-per-view, sorry. I did go last year to Power Struggle over at New Japan. But yeah, enjoyable experience. And if WWE brings a pay-per-view back to Australia, I'd prefer it to be on the East Coast because it would be a hell of a lot cheaper and easier for me to get to. But I would definitely consider going again. Anyway, that little review took longer than I thought, so I'm going to wrap up there and not bore you with the details of my life that I'm sure everyone just press skips on the podcast app when I start talking about Australia anyway, and let's head over to Nitro.
Wait a minute, not again!
What's the problem here?
Not again with this!
Does this work? Nice to see you dressed up this week, Larry.
I'm not putting up with this.
And I don't see you laughing today, huh?
Funny guy, huh?
Well, that was so funny last week, right? Like, funny like a clown, right? Were you laughing at me? Ain't so funny tonight, am I? See, we can put this on anytime we want. I can be real funny. I can be deadly. So can this man. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Bad neck, right?
You got the bad neck, right? Yeah. You want to pick up your kids? Huh?
You want to step in here?
Hey, you're the one that laughed at them. They know what I think of them. I'm not
talking about
Eastwood.
A triangle match, right? Well, there's two of the combatants laying out right now.
You know what I want to know? Is I've been hearing my whole career how scary the faces of fear are. Everybody says that Ming and the Barbarian are the two toughest guys in the business. Well, you tell those two Islanders, come on out here and we'll slap that coconut breath out of you. Tell him to come on down. You can't have a pay-per-view in WCW without inviting the NWO.
As you'll have heard there, Nitro opens up with the Outsiders stood over several tag teams in the ring and then begin picking on Tony Schiavone, and Larry Zbysko stands by watching. They go looking for the Faces of Fear backstage after this, who jump them backstage. This is a really great opening as we go out to a commercial, and Tony Schiavone walks off the set pissed off. Really sold the seriousness of this, and I thought it was a great way to open the show. We then go to La Parca versus Juventud Guerrera with a quick start, a spin kick from Hoovy. Mike Tenay comes out to save Larry Zbysko on the call. A spinaroonie by La Parca, which is quite funny. A tilt-a-whirl backbreaker for a two by La Parca, a suicide dive. And then he gets crotched on the top rope. Hoovy with a springboard up to him into a hurricanrana for a two. And then an acai moonsault, but inside the ring for a two. La Parca with a dropkick. Hoovy comes out of the air to eat the dropkick. A top rope dive to the floor. And then the commentary team tell us that Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan are in the building this evening. We then get back into the action. Hoovy with a Rana for a two, a DDT for a two, a tornado DDT for a two. Holy shit. And then La Parca catches Hoovy and hits him with a corkscrew moonsault for the 1-2-3 in a fantastic opener. Lots of high spots. Just super, super quick. Really great lucha action. We then see a cool clip of Ultimate Dragon, depending on who you ask at this time. It keeps flipping backwards and forwards between the two, and he has 8 belts, but wants to add the WCW Cruiserweight title to his collection. Our next match is Ultimo Dragon with all the belts, taking on Dean Malenko, the Cruiserweight champion. We see an inset promo from Ray on Dean Malenko. The match gets started with some chain wrestling. We've got Dean versus Psychosis and Rey versus Ultimo Dragon at World War 3, so that should be really cool. Ultimo with a hip toss out of a backdrop, some good kicks, and then we see some pinfall exchanges for twos between the two of them. Dragon with a dragon suplex for a two, Malenko with a clothesline. Today tells us that Bischoff has agreed to a stipulation that the NWO have asked for. I think they want their own show. They want Nitro, is the gist of that. He questions Bischoff's thought process here. This is a really fast match, so it's hard to keep up with the storyline chatter that the commentary team are giving us. Dragon misses a moonsault. Malenko locks on the clover leaf. Sonny Ono with a distraction. Malenko throws Dragon over the top rope to a DQ, which is a really lame ending for what was beginning to heat up with a good match. It never quite got to the highs of the one before, but it was getting in the right direction. We see an ad for Saturday night. NWO are going to be there, the Taskmaster and others. And we look at Nitro last week, the French Canadians versus Harlem Heat, and Sherry trying to deck Colonel Robert Parker. We then go to our next match, the French Canadians taking on the American Males. Marcus Alexander Bagwell starts us with a pair of drop kicks. The Males double team clothesline and backdrop. Jacques Rougeau hits a kip up and taunts, and then sucker punches Scotty Riggs. The Males are arguing here, and we've got some dissension in the ranks. A nasty slam from Jacques, and then slamming Pierre onto Riggs. Sorry. We get a bit of a beatdown from the heels here for a while. Riggs hits a hop tag, and Bagwell clears house. Riggs knocks Jacques' head into Bagwell, and then this allows the heels to pick up the three in a decent match, with some dissension between the babyfaces costing them the victory. Mike Tenay then shills the WCW website, which looks as 90s as any website I've ever seen at this point in time. And we go to our next contest, Lex Luger taking on Hugh Morris. We get a promo from Arn, and then we see the match start with a suplex from Hugh, which Lex Luger no-sells, an arm drag from Luger and a shoulder block, and the crowd are very hot for Luger here. Hugh Morris starts to show off, and Lex just hits him with clotheslines, three of them, and just everything Luger does gets a huge pop. Morris goes up top and misses a splash, and this allows Luger to put him up in the rack and pick up the submission victory, and Gene comes in to chat to Lex.
Let's go to the ring. Mean Gene Okerlund with comments from the total package.
All right, gentlemen, I think both of you are going to have to agree. Larry, and of course you, Mike, today. Very impressive effort on the part of the total package, Lex Luger. This man, Hugh Morris, who I have the utmost respect for, well over 300 pounds, and it's week after week after week, Lex Luger, you are on a tear.
Well, you know, I may be on a tear. A little momentum going my way for a change, but in World War III coming up, you're not one-on-one. There's 60 of the very best in the world representing WCW. He's going after one thing, and that's a shot at Hollywood, Hulk Hogan, and the NWO.
That's right. Lex Luger, you've got to be the odds-on favorite to win this now from what I've seen in the past 3 or 4 weeks. And I sat home for a couple of months at home, and I am most impressed.
Hey, oh, Gene!
We wondered where he was at.
What is this?
That's not a golf club in his hand.
Hey, and a baseball bat. Gentlemen, this is highly unusual. I would have to say, Mike and Larry, look at this.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for. What does this mean?
You got me, brother. Sting definitely went off the deep end. We saw him last week attack Jeff Jarrett for no reason. Now he comes in and does this. What is the man thinking? Even I, as brilliant as I am psychologically, can't figure out Sting's mind.
Lex Luger, here's a man that you know better than anybody in the... What do you make of this? Luger... He's not going to talk to me, ladies and gentlemen. All of this in advance of World War III next Sunday on pay-per-view.
So as you heard there, Sting comes out, nudges Luger with his bat, but then turns it around and hands it to him and walks off, and neither Sting nor Luger speak after that, so we're left wondering what's going on. We go out to a commercial. We see from Saturday night that Tony Schiavone was interviewing Nick Patrick and his lawyer, and Teddy Long and Chris Jericho came in. It was a bit of an awkward moment, though, so I'm glad it was on Saturday night and not Nitro. We then start hour two, and it's Bobby Heenan and Eric Bischoff in a much more muted swap over than normal. There's no pyro or fanfare, and we go to Johnny Grunge taking on Chris Jericho, who on the upload that I've got on Binge over here comes out to his Break the Walls Down theme, which is annoying. A slam and a spin kick from Jericho, and Nick Patrick is watching the match in all black and sunglasses. Looks like a tit. Grunge with a back suplex and a clothesline. Jericho with a dropkick as they brawl to the floor. A hot shot from Grunge, and then he sets up a table, puts Jericho on top, goes up top with a chair, but Jericho moves and Grunge goes through, and Jericho goes up top and hits a missile dropkick to pick up the three. Gene then interviews Jericho, and Teddy Long comes out. They try and take back the comment about Jericho taking on Nick Patrick with one arm behind his back from Saturday night, but Jericho wants the match anyway. It's going to be a one-armed Chris Jericho taking on Nick Patrick at World War III as we go out to a commercial. When we come back, the commentary team tell us Hogan is here, but Piper hasn't been spotted yet, so they may have been a bit premature with that comment earlier. Hulk comes out with DiBiase, Vincent, and Liz, and makes Bischoff tell the world that he is the biggest icon. Then Piper then says that Piper is scared of Hogan. We then go to Gene with DDP. Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, The Giant, and Six walk out, and they speak in some weird riddles, which I'll splice in here for you because I can't really explain it any better.
I apologize. Gene, please take it.
Eric, it sounds to me like they're putting the heat on you over there at the broadcast table. Diamond Dallas Page, we've just seen members of the NWO, the New World Order here. And last week on this very television program, I think they made you an offer that indeed you did refuse. You said they would be the eighth man at the New World Order. Now you can imagine how Larry Fortensky felt when he was chosen number eight.
Whatever, Gene. Since Scott Hall and Kevin Nash came back to the WCW, wait a minute, the NWO, whatever, and they've been wreaking havoc everywhere, you'll notice, Gene, whenever anything went down, DDP was nowhere to be found. And there's a reason for that. I let them do their thing, and I do mine. And now they're cutting into my time again.
Gentlemen, I think he has made it perfectly clear, and I don't want to be bounced around here by the New World Order. He has made it perfectly clear he's not going to go your direction. Yes, Dallas, am I right on that?
I didn't even hear what you said with all this.
Hey, you get your wake-up call yet?
You figure it out?
Huh? You get it?
Get what?
You don't get it.
I got. I didn't appreciate that comment thrown in my face about Bischoff last week. That's one thing I get.
He don't get it. He really doesn't get it.
He don't know. I know.
What's the problem? I don't understand why we just don't take him out quick, fast, in a hurry, like we do all the Hogan's friends. Punk him. That's what we need to do.
Take it easy. Guys, what? Wait a minute now. There's got to be.
I don't know.
You know.
You know, this business, hey. Good for you.
I got a little quote from you. Stanley Kubrick, 2001 Space Odyssey. It's going to be something very beautiful happen tonight. Very beautiful.
All right, gentlemen from the New World Order, Hall Nash, The Giant, and of course, Six.
I'm a man who stands alone. That's where the self-high five comes from.
I don't know what he meant. Something is supposed to be happening tonight. That's a promise from the New World Order. And I still don't know the position of Diamond Dallas Page. That's one for you to figure out.
See, a bit of a cryptic promise there from Nash at the end. We then go to our next match, which is Bobby Eaton taking on Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett starts off, it's back to Mike Tenay and Heenan on commentary team now, by the way. Sorry, Bischoff left after that. He got punked by Hogan and his buddies at the table. Jarrett starts off with an inverted atomic drop. They brawl on the floor, a suplex from Jarrett and a figure four as Ric Flair comes out with a sling on. That gets the victory, and then Gene's with Jarrett and Flair. Flair says Jarrett is in the Four Horsemen, so that ends the argument that he and Comrade have been having for years. And we see Sting watching this interview as we go to commercial. Lee Marshall's on the phone to tell us about a Nitro party, same old stuff there. And we go to our next match, Big Bubba taking on Jim Powers with Jimmy Hart out with Bubba. Powers works on the arm and a drop toe hold and a cross body before we get a big right hand from Bubba, a clothesline, an Enziguri, and the Boss Man Slam for a 1-2-3 and a bit of a nothing match there. Go to another commercial, and when we come back, it's Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero, which gets off to a lightning fast start. Woman's out with Benoit. We get a Sullivan promo during the match, Guerrero with a springboard splash for a 2. Benoit then grounds Guerrero, and it comes a bit of a slugfest as we go to a commercial. We see a Rana to the outside from Guerrero. They brawl on the floor again. Guerrero tries another Hurricane Rana, but Benoit rolls through with a 1-2-3. And we're told we're going to see an Eric Bischoff statement in the ring after this commercial break. When we come back, Bischoff is in the ring, and he apologizes for what Hogan made him say earlier, and Piper comes out to a huge pop. Cuts a promo on Hogan, but then when he says liar, speaking of Hogan, he looks at Bischoff and really emphasizes it, grabs Bischoff and calls him a piece of shit. The NWO then come out and grab Piper, and Hogan and Bischoff hug in the ring. Piper being restrained, but he spits on Hogan. Cops come to the ring. This really seems real. There's a bit of a melee with Piper trying to get to Hogan, but the NWO and the cops running interference here. Piper gets back on the mic, and I think we're off the air, but he says that he's got a fight in him before we go off the air. This is just an awesome finish to Nitro. I've been critical about some of the lame endings of the shows in some of the recent episodes, even though the content's been really good leading up, and this is one of the best endings they've had to a Nitro in a long, long time. As for the ratings on these two shows, it's a 2.4 to Raw and a 3.5 to Nitro, so a clear victory there by 1.1 points. And for once, I think I'm going to go with the majority here and not be too controversial in my picks. For crowd heat, I went with Nitro. Although the crowd was good on Raw, this is going to be a bit of a tale of the ratings today, I think. Production, I tied. I don't think there was any significant win either way. Storylines, I went with Nitro, although we got good storyline progression on Raw. Characters, I went with Nitro, even though we did get some good characters on Raw, but, you know, they're one-hour shows. They do normally leave a few top-tier talent off and rotate them. And match quality, even though I loved Mankind and Austin, I went Nitro. You couldn't really go past the effort of Juventud Guerrera and La Parca as the best match on either show, and then we followed it up with Dragon and Malenko, and even though it was only short, Benoit and Guerrero as well. All in all, a couple of really enjoyable shows, but Nitro was clearly dominant at this point in time, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what happens with Piper and Hogan going forward. I don't think the match will be great, but the story has been, and that for TV right now is enough to pick up the victory and keep the ratings going strong. So thanks everyone for tuning in. I'm not going to make promises about when I'll be back or how many episodes are coming, because I seem to just keep breaking them. So I will be back when I'm back, and thanks everyone for listening.